quick Scott's bummed about the humidor. And pick your milk for breakfast cereal, Mount Rushmore. They'll be there for you. There's a non-zero chance. They'll be there for you. Help you with lead dominance. They'll be there for you. And read some emails too.
How do you navigate through rounds one and two? That's what we're going to help you with on today's episode of the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. You can just use the rankings in the draft room, I guess. But what fun is that? We're going to talk about it, the differences in the top 24 for Scott and Heath, and we'll do points and roto slash categories. Welcome, everybody. It's Fantasy Baseball Today. Get in our bracket challenge. I'll talk to you about that a little bit later. We've got risers and fallers. We've got buy or sell. We've got your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Most importantly, we have Scott White. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Adam.
There he is. We've got Chris Towers. Give me some energy, Chris.
What's up?
Whoa, I like it. I was not expecting that. And we've got playoff beard Heath Cummings.
I've been in the playoffs for quite some time, and I'm looking forward to being in the playoffs again. I'm currently in the playoffs in my fantasy basketball league going up against Jamie Eisenberg.
Oh, what round?
It is the semifinals.
Big. Yeah, I lost in the first round.
Big.
Yeah, you were kind of a fraudulent playoff team anyway.
I believe I was ranked higher than you.
Since nobody is going to hear this, which do you like better, fantasy basketball or fantasy football?
Fantasy football for sure.
Agree.
Really? Okay. I don't play fantasy basketball.
Oh, fantasy basketball.
The season's just too long.
I feel like fantasy basketball is the easiest because players just kind of, you know, as long as their role isn't changing, they just kind of do the same thing every night. There's not that variability that you see in the other fantasy sports.
Oh, interesting. Well, maybe I'll play next year. It's a little too late now. So let's start with this big news item. Josh Donaldson is dealing with a calf issue. 3 years in a row now, a calf issue for Josh Donaldson. It might not be that serious. He's going 29th overall, right in between George Springer and Noah Syndergaard. So it's like Cody Bellinger, Steven Strasburg, Springer, Donaldson, Syndergaard, Seager, D. Gordon. What do you guys think? Are you nervous about this with Josh Donaldson?
I think you have to be, the way last season started for him with a similar issue. He wasn't right at the plate, ended up missing an extended period of time, and a lot of us were writing him off because of it. Then he came back, had a monster second half, looked like an MVP caliber player again, and so we're pretty much right back on board with him this spring. I guess downgraded a little because of age, but still obviously early third rounder. It's a little concerning, sure.
Is it concerning enough to take him later or still early third round?
I mean, when I first made out my rankings, I had Rendon ahead of him, and I since thought better of it. But the reason I had Rendon ahead of him is because I thought age and injuries might be starting to become an issue for Donaldson, and so maybe I need to revisit that because it's happening again.
Okay. Any other final thoughts there?
I'd kind of baked this in just a little bit. I had him in the third to fourth round range more than the early third. I may drop him down to like fourth, fifth.
Okay.
Which means just not getting him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little far because the hitters you're drafting in the fourth or fifth aren't going to be like Josh Donaldson could still be a first round caliber hitter this year, you know?
Yeah, he could be.
I mean, he was for the last, 3 months of the season.
Yeah.
It's just, we've seen how this can affect him. And right. It's worth saying the team doesn't think it's serious right now. Now, the team never thinks it's serious until
it wasn't serious last year, was it?
It's being called a calf cramp due to dehydration. That does not sound serious.
Well, wait a second.
But he hasn't played since Saturday.
That sounds more serious.
That doesn't sound like a cramp. And he's not expected to play until at least Friday.
Okay.
You usually don't miss 6 days for a calf cramp due to dehydration.
No, you don't.
Suck on a mustard packet, eat a banana.
It is also spring training, and he's a veteran hitter. Like, he doesn't need to play that much.
All right, just something to be aware of. You know, if it were like a knee or something, it'd be one thing, but it's a calf, and that's 3 seasons in a row. All right, let's do some rankings. Not that a knee would be good, but calf, you know, for him, calf is worse. Okay, rankings, risers, and fallers real quick here. We will also talk about prospects today, the ones you need to know about, the ones you need to draft. Scott, give me one or two rankings, risers for you over any period of time.
Over any period of time, Garrett Richards is one. been really impressed with what he's done this spring. And it was a continuation of what he did last September, actually, after returning from the arm issues. Just overpowering stuff. A lot of strikeouts. Much more efficient than I remember him being before the injury. And perhaps because he realizes he needs to be to get any kind of for the Angels to let him pitch deep enough into games to really make an impact. And I think the fact that they're going with the 6-man rotation is actually going to help him. Now it's going to limit his number of 2-start weeks, but I think the upside is high enough that he could emerge as somebody we're starting every week, even if it's just one start at a time. So he's somebody who's now in my top 45 starting pitchers, I want to say. I'm going to double check that, but definitely moved him up from like the late round range to more of the middle round range. He's 52nd.
Okay. Garrett Richards is actually the 43rd pitcher off the board. He's going in between Danny Duffy and Chase Anderson. But if you hit Control F again, if you hit Enter again, you'll get to Amir Garrett, and he's going much later than that. But that doesn't matter. Garrett Richards, 170th overall.
Hey, Amir Garrett looks like he's going to get a rotation spot.
Does he?
Anthony DeSclafani keeps falling apart.
Yeah, they have a lot of options there. He had a really good appearance. It was technically a relief appearance early this spring, but I don't think it's gone well since then.
All right, then. So Garrett Richards is a riser for Scott. And Heath, you've got a couple of risers that you can give us.
I do have two risers. One, we've had some requests for a little more deep league stuff. So this is a little deeper league because I wouldn't take him necessarily in the first 23 rounds, more of a reserve round guy. But Nate Jones, there was actually an article talking about how Jones may be the favorite to be the closer. Joaquin Soria had a just brutal first appearance. He's calmed down a little bit since then, but there's been a lot of praise of Jones in camp. We've seen Soria be not very good over the last couple of years. We've been excited about Jones before. He has good stuff. So I think we need to move him up more into the range of guys that could be closers relatively early in the year, maybe as early as opening day.
Okay. Like that AJ Minter, Keone Kella.
Would put him ahead of those guys, but not a lot.
Well, you know, it is the White Sox. That's obviously part of the consideration. They're not going to be very good, but Nate Jones could be the White Sox closer, so know that. Who else is a riser for you, Heath?
It's Michael Conforto. I had dropped him quite a bit at the beginning of spring just because he was not very close to playing baseball. Well, now he's very close to playing baseball. In fact, maybe just a little bit ahead of schedule. He's talking about playing in a spring training game next week.
It's DH only, right?
Right, yeah. Right, but right on schedule, if not slightly ahead. So I think Conforto gets a little bit of bump just because the upside, if the Mets were to let him play every day and he were to stay healthy, the upside, the top 20 outfielder.
All right, Michael Conforto. So where is he in your rankings now? Is he like number four, number five?
Number four or number five?
On draft day, is top outfielder.
I mean. A number four or number five outfielder.
Number five.
It was obvious 56. What he meant. Use context clues.
Wait, like what could I possibly have meant other than that?
He was being a jerk.
I don't get it.
I was not being a jerk. I didn't know what he meant. You are being a jerk right now. That's not a surprise.
It seemed a little jerkish.
Welcome back to
the
podcast,
Heath.
Chris
has cultivated this reputation. This is what he wants, ultimately.
He's a controversial guy. All right, so the risers are Garrett Richards for Scott, Nate Jones, Michael Conforto for Heath. And the thing about Conforto, right, Heath, is it's not just that we don't know exactly when he's going to play, but we don't know how good he's going to be after a serious shoulder injury.
I feel pretty confident that, well, yes, after the shoulder injury, we don't know for sure that he gets back to his old self. But I feel very confident that he's going to be good against right-handed pitchers. But if he's only good against right-handed pitchers, then it may not matter.
Okay. Now the fallers. Heath, give me a couple fallers.
Ian Desmond, I really don't like the position that he's in, especially after the cargo signing. He has not had a good spring at all. And the first five games the Rockies played, he played twice at first base and none in the outfield. Maybe that's just because they're saving his legs because he's a veteran. But they seem enamored with Ryan McMahon. They've re-signed Carlos Gonzalez. I still think Desmond, they're going to start the year with him being a big part of the lineup, but his leash is extremely short.
Okay, I just want to go through the Rockies and all the moving parts, because sometimes I get a little confused. So
sure.
Who are the guys that could be less than full-time player? Like, you tell me how you break it down between first base and outfield.
The only Rocky first baseman slash outfielder who I feel confident is going to play every day is Charlie Blackmon.
I know him.
Because then apart from him, they have...
They have four everyday players in their lineup.
Blackmon, Arenado, Story.
LeMahieu and Story.
Yeah. Yeah, so apart from Blackmon in that outfield first base picture, you have Gerardo Parra, who can play either one. You have Ian Desmond, who could play either one. You have Ryan McMahon, who would have to play first base. You have David Dahl, who would have to play the outfield. You have...
Raimel Tapia,
who's probably going to begin the year in the minors. But, you know, Dahl's probably going to begin the year in the minors, too. They'll both factor at some point. Am I forgetting somebody?
Did you say Carlos Gonzalez?
Yeah, Carlos Gonzalez now obviously is there. And I would guess he's, if we're handicapping at bats, I would guess, you know, he's more likely to get at bats than most of those guys.
Mike Tauchman.
Yeah, he's there too.
Yeah, there's him. He's probably just a bench role.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so Heath Desmond is a guy that, sum it up real quick in one sentence.
He's a number five outfielder now with number three upside.
Okay. And Marcus Stroman is a faller for you. He will not be ready for opening day, but he might be ready not long after that.
He could be ready not long after that. He sounds more optimistic. The team's a little bit iffy, and there's really no reason to push Marcus Stroman back from this quickly. That I don't expect the Jays are going to be competing with the Yankees and the Red Sox, and I think he's either a big part of their future or a very important trade chip for the rebuild. So from a fantasy perspective, there's not an enormous amount of upside with Marcus Stroman, and this just adds more downside.
I feel like this Stroman thing, it sounds to me like one of those things we worry a lot about in spring training, and then come May 1st, we never pay it a second thought. Because there is a good chance he still takes his first turn. If it's not his first turn, he takes his second turn. You know,
right,
and he's basically Marcus Stroman from that point forward.
That's the thing, is that when they say he's been ruled out for opening day, he could pitch in the opening series.
And it's basically like Jacob deGrom. We're not really worried about him. Jacob deGrom is going to pitch the second game of the season. It's just happening a little bit later. Now, it is an arm injury, and it is time in spring training that he's not throwing, so that's not great.
It's not nothing, but I feel like a disproportionate amount is being made of this particular injury, and it's taken me to a point where I find myself drafting Stroman at a good value. And he's a player that I feel like I only want if it's at a good value, because he's not, you know, the standout bat misser, but he is a great innings eater.
He's going 130th overall right
now. That seems like great value to me.
Especially in a points league. You guys can disagree if you want, but I've said it before. I'm going to repeat a lot of things that we've already said because, you know, it's time to really drill things into people's heads, I guess. But Stroman, to me, seems like a pitcher that has maybe the most value difference in points in Roto, or among the most. He's much better
than
points.
Yeah, but he's still good in Roto.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to hurt you. He's very similar. The numbers over the last 2 years are extremely similar to Dallas Keuchel. Marcus Stroman's thrown 200 innings each of the last two seasons.
Well,
he's pretty good.
The innings eating aspect obviously has a direct impact in points leagues because innings are worth 3 points apiece.
Yeah.
But I wrote an article earlier this week talking about innings being the new market inefficiency at starting pitcher. And one point I brought up in that is that, you know, we assess pitchers' strikeout potential by their K per nine or their strikeout percentage usually, but they need innings for those strikeouts to come to fruition. And Marcus Stroman, just one example, Marcus Stroman had more strikeouts than James Paxton last year. And, you know, James Paxton is a guy who missed time with injury. So, you know, maybe he isn't as good of an example as somebody who we like the strikeout potential, but they're only going to pitch five innings at a time, like a Lance McCullers type. I think McCullers did actually get more strikeouts than Stroman, but it was very close.
That's the thing. I don't think he probably had more strikeouts than James Paxton and a replacement level starting pitcher.
Right,
but
that's why I was using a different example.
So he's really probably a one category contributor.
Yeah.
No. My point is though, like, we don't think of Marcus Stroman as a big strikeout pitcher, but if he's in your lineup, relative to a lot of these guys who aren't going to provide length, he's probably not actually hurting you that much in the strikeout category.
All right, and then finally, just want to say, Stroman, I mean, based on the last 2 years, could have a 1.3 whip. So that's, you know, that is not a great thing for him.
That's not good. That's probably the worst aspect of Stroman.
So, Scott, I want to know about some prospects. Who to draft and who to have on our radar. Who's coming up mid-season? Who's coming up early in the season? I don't think we need to talk about Ronald Acuna. He's always a headliner on the show. So, you know, other than him, who are some prospects that you think people need to know about on draft day?
Well, ones who are actually going to make the major league roster out of spring training, it's a limited selection. You have J.P. Crawford of the Phillies, who will be gaining shortstop eligibility because that's the position he'll be playing. You have Ryan McMahon potentially being the first baseman for Colorado, and he hit like 350 between two minor league stops last year. So if he plays enough, that would be exciting. Lewis Brinson of the Marlins, who was terrible and limited exposure with the Brewers last year, but a power speed guy who is, you know, thought to have a really high ceiling. He's somebody who's getting drafted in five outfielder leagues. Those are probably the biggest name immediate contributors or immediate contributors.
Let's repeat them for the audience. Other than Acuna, you said who?
I said J.P. Crawford of the Phillies, Ryan McMahon of the Rockies, and Lewis Brinson of the Marlins.
Okay.
But then there's obviously other prospects who need to be on your radar for contributing probably sooner than later. Austin Hayes is one we talked about yesterday. The Orioles don't really have a great option in right field apart from him. Had a bad spring because he was battling an injury, but I still expect to see him sooner than later. Nick Senzel has gotten playing time all around the Reds infield this spring. Third baseman by trade, and kind of like I feel like he has kind of a Scott Rolen profile, where he could be a big time fantasy contributor. Somebody I'm drafting in deeper mixed leagues just to stash away. Victor Robles of the Nationals, I think is going to take over for Michael Taylor, who I don't think any of us believe in Michael Taylor, right? Had a good power speed season last year, but
I think
doesn't
Victor
make
Robles
enough
is a really good buy in the late rounds on draft day because he's a guy who could steal 40 bases.
Yep.
Francisco Mejia.
Who? Francisco Mejia.
Yeah, Francisco Mejia. Like they're trying. He's a catcher, but they're trying him at other positions to get him up sooner, which tells you he's probably going to be up pretty soon. They tried third base at first, but now they're trying the outfield.
He was sent down yesterday, right?
Possibly. Yeah, he's still the long-term plan at catcher, but they like their catching options that they currently have. He's eligible at catcher, so that's the main thing that matters. Scott Kingery of the Phillies, he's another guy who's been playing all over in an effort to create more opportunities for him to break in. Blocked at second base by Cesar Hernandez, obviously, but 2020 guy in the minors last year.
Okay. Luis Urias. I was reading an article yesterday, I think in the San Diego Union-Tribune, that he could be up by the end of April or May. So keep an eye on him. Shortstop prospect who runs a lot, not particularly well.
Yeah.
33 stolen bases, 37 caught stealings in his minor league career.
He's a really good contact hitter and a really good plate discipline guy. So, yeah, it's hard to see how exactly that's going to translate in fantasy, but if nothing else, I suspect him to hit for a high average. Some pitchers. Michael Kopech's probably the most exciting right now. Throws really hard, big strikeout potential. Not sure exactly when the rebuilding White Sox are going to want to break him in, but he should be ready sooner than later. Jack Flaherty for the Cardinals has had a really good spring. Cardinals have a lot of potential pitfalls in their rotation, so I could see him coming up soon. AJ Puck has gotten a lot of attention in A's camp to the point that I think he's technically in a battle for the starting five, but I would suspect that's a long shot.
Their manager said he's been their best pitcher. Flat out in the spring training.
First round pick a couple years ago. Huge K per nine in the minors last year, but kind of a high ERA too.
Did you mention Mackenzie Gore? Do you need to?
Oh, he's 18 or 19. He's not going to contribute this year.
Mitch Keller? Walker Buehler?
Walker Buehler, yeah, there's a good chance. It's just with his case, he pitches for the Dodgers. And obviously they have a lot of – they have some rotation excess there already. Might be make it a little harder for him to break in.
And
but Luis Gohara, who, because of injuries this spring, isn't going to break the make the Braves starting five. He's somebody who I still expect to see as soon as, like, May.
And did you say Forrest Whitley?
Well, 50-game suspension for him.
Yeah.
Because of positive a 50-game drug suspension, but not for PEDs.
Right. So, Astros pitching prospects.
So I wouldn't expect to see him till after the All-Star break.
Sure. Okay. And then Gleyber Torres was sent down. Willie Calhoun was sent down.
Yep. Those are... Yeah, there's a lot of names. There's a lot of names who I think are very close to breaking in. Those I probably should have mentioned. I could mention Willie Adames for the Rays, who's their shortstop of the future and has already gotten plenty of time at AAA. Like,
what is the deal with Franklin Barreto? Is he still a thing? Because Marcus Semien is not a bad late round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean Barreto, his prospect stock has fallen a bit because he wasn't as good in the upper minors as he was in the lower minors, and he doesn't have very good plate discipline. But there are still plenty of prospect evaluators who are really fond of him, and he's had a very good spring. I would guess it's more likely than not either Jed Lowrie or Marcus Semien suffers an extended injury at some point, and Barreto gets a chance to prove himself.
Barreto doesn't get leapfrogged by Mateo?
Well,
Jorge Mateo.
I guess it's possible.
I think you have them back to back in your top 100, right?
Yeah, Jorge Mateo actually homered twice in spring yesterday.
Yeah,
but it was his first two homers of the spring. He's no more as a speed guy, big time base stealer. All right. It's possible he could beat Barreto up.
I think we've given enough names. I hope he doesn't beat him up.
Yeah,
that would be good.
That would probably slow his ascent.
Let's not encourage that, Scott. Very violent Scott White today. All right, so that's good stuff. Rewind the podcast. Listen to all those names again. There are a lot of them. But the four that Scott mentioned, other than Acuna, J.P. Crawford, Ryan McMahon, Lewis Brinson. Actually, it was Acuna plus those three, Crawford, McMahon, and Brinson. And then you got Austin Hayes, Nick Senzel, Victor Robles, and then
one of the ones I'm drafting highest. I didn't even mention Jesse Winker. He's part of that four-man outfield rotation for the Reds.
Is he a prospect still?
He's still rookie eligible. Yeah, he was 33 in my preseason top 100. So hey, you want to check that out? That's probably where you're going to find the most names.
Yes,
Scott White's top 100 prospects.
You'll find 100.
It was
names.
First published in January, so it may have gotten pushed down a
Let's
little.
Let's say every name in there.
Every single name.
It's on the fantasy baseball homepage.
There you go.
In the headline stack on the right at the top.
Yeah.
So just look there.
Top 100 prospects. And I give you like Scott's 2018 fantasy impact rating, so you know which guys are far off and which are going to help this year.
We didn't say Ahmed Rosario, did we? He's
technically not.
Oh, he's not a prospect.
Rookie eligible anymore.
But home run yesterday.
He is a young guy with a lot of upside who I like drafting late, especially in roto leagues, because I think he's an undervalued steal source.
And that is the Mets shortstop, Ahmed Rosario. All righty then. Announcements for you. The Bracket Challenge. If you want to be in, you can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, or you can just follow us on Twitter. We've been tweeting about it. If you're leading after the Elite Eight, you're in the podcast league. So we have over 700 people now. We had over 1,400 people last year. I want to get back up to that number. So everybody, you've got one day. Join it. The Bracket Challenge. Please be part of it. We have a lot of other podcasts. I just listened to two great bracket breakdowns yesterday. Very, very different. You want a more numerical, statistical-based one, computer-based one? You listen to the Sportsline DFS podcast, Heath Cummings, Mike McClure. They did a bracket breakdown. If you want college basketball analysts who also are in tune with the computers and the Ken Palms and all that, you can listen to Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball podcast, which is one of the most popular podcasts on iTunes right now, sports podcast. Ion College Basketball, it is an awesome show. They've got you at least three times a week. And so if you're hooked on March Madness, check out that podcast. CBS Sports HQ, you're going to want to be watching CBS Sports HQ during the tournament. This will be the best place to get all the breaking news, all the highlights, all the reaction. CBSSportsHQ.com, or you can watch. I watch on my Roku all the time. You can watch on your connected devices on the CBS Sports app. And if you want to sign up for a league, please do so at CBSSports.com/FBT. cbssports.com/FBT to sign up for our commissioner product. It is the best. And, of course, read Aaron Judge, the Chris's article on Aaron Judge. Pretty good comparison to Ryan Howard and what that might mean for him this year and going forward. And we'll talk about Judge in a bit. Yeah, well, I only promote Chris articles, as we know.
Yep.
So there we go. Here's your tweet of the day. It's from Chris Ripley. Funny hearing Scott White say, "Where are your manners?" when referring to drinking the cereal milk. You're eating cereal. Who are we trying to impress here? If we can't tip that bowl back in our own home without getting judged, then something's wrong.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And I think probably if you're sitting around in sweatpants, anything goes. But if I'm in the company of anyone else and I do happen to be eating cereal, there's no way I go for that.
Can we just contrast that with another Scott White tweet from just like 2 hours later?
Oh, yeah. My point was to contrast it.
My wife has on many occasions admonished me for licking the bottom of a bowl of ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Do not ever lecture us on manners again in the history of the podcast.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I was worried from some of my Twitter responses that people saw me as some kind of like Mr. Mannerly.
No, you're just a hypocrite.
Well, no, that's what I was pointing out. Like, you know what? I have my own slovenly habits.
Is cereal soup?
No.
Yeah, cereal. Yeah, soup.
No.
Absolutely.
No. What?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It is the stupidest thing, Team Creeth. Well, what side of that are you officially on, Chris? Because it's stupid from Heath. Yes.
What?
What do you think? Is it soup?
Is milk broth?
No.
I mean,
cow broth.
Kind of.
There is such
kinda.
A thing as beef
there's no,
broth.
There's no kind of here. Is it a kinda? Soup? Is it soup, yes or no?
Is it soup? This is dumb.
Milk is gross. Stop drinking milk.
I mean, that's ultimately what it like. If I like loved the taste of lukewarm milk with cereal fragments in it, then maybe
sugar.
Then like, maybe I would throw
really.
There's maybe a big I would throw between, manners to the side
what,
and
big difference
tip
between
it
that
back.
And ice cream.
What's
but,
the difference?
Well, between ice thing. Cream is that's the thing. Ice cream is the most delicious Look, thing in the world.
Clam
of course,
chowder,
I'm gonna lap up every molecule of it.
Is just hot milk with bugs in it.
Oh my god!
One
All right, done.
Goodness.
Done. We're done. We're done. Let's,
well,
let's move
one
on.
One of the first things Scott ever told me about South Florida is that the ice cream is expensive down here. So. Like, that's one of my first memories of a conversation with
yeah.
Scott.
It's, well, you see what my ice cream budget.
So we all agree cereal is soup.
No, we're done. We're done. Let's talk about rounds one and two and the best ways to draft in rounds one and two. So you want to get your draft off to a good start. Let's do it. So I take a look at the top 24 on cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball. And you can see the rankings in both points and roto. When we say head-to-head, we are referring to points leagues, not head-to-head categories leagues. If you're interested in categories leagues, the Roto rankings are for you. But in points leagues, let's start with that. And 1 through 6, so I broke it down like basically in groups of 6 for the most part. So 1 through 6 overall, I don't know how much we want to get into it. We haven't really talked about it much lately, but you know, the top 6 in points leagues for Heath and for Scott are the same 6 players in a different order. And Heath does not have Mike Trout number 1. He has Trout number 2. He has Altuve 1, Trout 2. Scott has Trout 1, Altuve 2. I don't know. It's just positional scarcity, right, Heath?
Yeah, it's positional scarcity.
Okay.
Which doesn't exist.
Okay, so anyway, without spending the whole show on that, it's some form of Trout, Altuve, Harper, Arenado, Betts, and Blackman. I guess the big difference, well, first of all, you both have Bryce Harper number 4 overall. And it's interesting. I certainly don't disagree. I'm not trying to say I disagree with anything because everybody could be right or wrong or whatever with your top 12, top 6. But Scott, I'll just throw you on the spot because you like to say you don't want to mess up your first few picks.
Yeah.
Bryce Harper's got a lot of risk at number 4 overall.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And this is something I've had a hard time reconciling because I think among the first round hitters, he is the riskiest. He's the most likely to ruin your season. But he was also the second best hitter on a per game basis last year after Trout. Now, part of the reason I haven't had to face this really is because I'm so high on Arenado that, like, I when I'm drafting in that part of the draft, Arenado's always there. And if he's not there, like, the only times I've had to take Harper were something like eighth overall, where obviously you take Harper. So it's never been a situation where I have the fourth pick and, oh crap, do I really take Harper? That hasn't actually happened yet.
Because you have Arenado third, whereas Heath has Arenado fifth behind Harper.
Yeah, and, right. You know, a lot of people aren't as high on Arenado as I am, apart from Heath. So, you know what? But the thing is, like, you consider who you could rank ahead of Harper. It's like Charlie Blackmon, who, you know, is 31 and never had the year he had last year before that. You know, he was more like a late first rounder at this time last year. It's Mookie Betts, who didn't even perform like a first rounder last year. But, you know, we think obviously that it was about the worst case scenario for him, given some of the batted ball data. But he didn't perform like a first rounder last year.
Right. But his floor, we saw it last year. Mm-hmm. And it is considerably higher than Bryce Harper's.
But Bryce Harper's floor is
Bryce Harper
because of
has
health.
Only performed like a first rounder once.
Well, last year he performed. Last year on a per game basis, he was a first rounder. He was the second best hitter in fantasy. So I would disagree that he's only performed like a first rounder once. And the bad 2016 sandwiched in between, obvious health issues there. Was playing through back and neck stuff that he conclusively confirmed last year with his performance.
How few games would Bryce Harper have to play before he didn't perform like a first rounder?
Well, okay. Let me just we can go round and round on that. Technically, Bryce Harper has only had one season in which he's performed like a first rounder on a full season basis. But he has had two seasons where he's been the best or second best hitter in baseball on a per game basis. So you can, you know.
I mean, the thing is, Heath has him fourth, so I don't know what he's doing here, just playing devil's advocate.
I thought we were discussing the order of the first six picks.
Well, why do you have Harper fourth?
I have Mookie Betts. I was talking about Mookie Betts versus Harper in the floor.
Okay.
But you have Betts ahead. You have Betts third, and Scott has Arenado.
Oh, he has
third.
Betts ahead. Okay.
Yes.
So he just has, okay.
Okay, so for Scott, it's Trout, Altuve, Arenado, Harper. For Heath, it's Altuve, Trout, Betts, Harper. Then Arenado, then Blackmon. Scott has Blackmon fifth and Betts sixth. I mean, they're an obvious top six. The most important takeaway is that no pitcher in the top six in either points or roto for you guys. And Bryce Harper fourth overall. And I think we can just let people decide 3 through 6 who you want to take. And we're not going to say that you're making the wrong choice. I think you really should take Trout and Altuve 1 and 2, and that's what everybody's doing. And then after that, like, there are a lot of great players 3 through 6. You want to go Arenado, Harper, Blackmon, Betts, whatever. I think we should point out that Betts is safer in points.
Mm-hmm.
His plate discipline is outstanding. He scores a ton of runs. He might lead baseball in plate appearances. He might be my third overall pick, maybe fourth overall pick in points. I think I'd take him over Harper, but he has less upside. So
yeah, your point, outside of maybe Trey Turner, third overall in a roto league, I can't make a passionate plea for any one of those players over any of the others. My preference is Arenado because he feels the safest, but there are pros and cons for each of them.
Yep, and maybe considering if you're in a 5 outfielder league versus 3 outfielder might also come into play. All right, so let's go to 7 through 12. You guys basically have the same ranking for Clayton Kershaw. Scott has him 8th overall. Heath has him 7th overall. But really the big difference here, and I'll go to Heath, is the pitchers. Because Heath has all 4 of the Super Aces in his 7 through 12 rankings, in both points and roto. Scott only has 1. Scott only has Clayton Kershaw in his top 12. And then 13, 14, and 18 are pitchers for Scott. But Heath, why don't you speak about that? Because after your top 6... which is Altuve, Trout, Betts, Harper, Arenado, Blackmon. It's Kershaw, Scherzer, Kluber, Sale, are 7 through 10.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a safe pitcher, but this Kershaw, Scherzer, Kluber, Sale has, in my opinion, a much higher combination of floor and ceiling than any other pitcher, and especially in points. If I can get 1 or 2 of those guys, at the back of the first, I feel like it's almost a requirement.
2 of them, huh?
I'll take in a points league, points only. I'll take 2 of them.
Would anybody else do that?
I've thought about it. I haven't found myself in a position to do it yet. I would lean against it because it seems like it's taking on a little too much risk. And there is a huge drop off between those four pitchers and the rest. But there is also a very big drop off between the top 25 hitters or so and the rest of the hitters. And I think after that drop off at hitter, the pitchers stand out more. So, you know, once we get past the first 2.5 rounds worth of hitters, then that's a time where you want to go pitcher heavy for 2 or 3 rounds. So, it's kind of unnecessary, I feel like, to double up on those big four because of that. But I mean, I get the appeal of it. It is like those four are probably, outside of Trout and Altuve, the biggest singular advantage you can get at any position. So I get it. I just think, you know, you want advantages at hitter too.
So why, Scott, do you not have those pitchers other than Kershaw in your top 12? Why are you taking Stanton and Bryant and Turner and Goldschmidt and Correa over them?
Well, it's worth mentioning that our rankings tend to be tailored for 12-team leagues. If you're doing a 15-team draft, maybe I do prioritize some of those pitchers over it ahead of some of the hitters I have in that same range. But, you know, thinking in terms of a 12-team draft, I don't really care which of Scherzer, Kluber, and Sale I get. There's not a lot of differentiation between them to me. Confidence levels about the same. Doesn't matter. And if you're picking towards the end of a 12-team draft, you can take one of those guys with your second pick. Like, there's no reason to reach for your first pick for them, except for Kershaw, obviously, who you have to take a little earlier. So I would rather be able to choose among the hitters than decide I gotta have Kluber over Scherzer. So that's why I rank them lower. Now, again, in a 15-team league, you can't count on getting them with your second pick. You probably have to take them with your first. So it's different, but
okay.
I rank it for a 12-team league.
I like that, and I think that you're probably right. In most cases, you can get those guys in the second round. I do think if you can know the tendencies of the people you're drafting with, it's possible that if you have the eighth pick, that you might not be able to get one of those big four in the second round.
Oh, I think, yeah, like if you have the seventh, you almost certainly aren't. If you have the eighth, you might. If you have the ninth, like it gets closer and closer each time. If I was at 11 and I only wanted one of them, I think that would make perfect sense if there were a couple left. But at 9 or 10, I don't think you're guaranteed at all.
Yeah, but then, okay, so let's say I have the seventh pick, and I'm thinking to myself, in a head-to-head points league, if I don't take a starting pitcher here at 7, I'm not getting a starting pitcher in the first 2 rounds. I personally would be fine with that, and I don't think I would take a starting pitcher at 7. It's personal preference. Like, I'm fine taking Syndergaard or DeGrom or Strasburg or Bumgarner or whatever in round 3 and going with 2 hitters with my first 2 picks. But if you guys are sitting there at the pick 7 and thinking all of the top 4 pitchers are going to be gone in round 2, do you automatically say, all right, I'm taking Kershaw here? Or
seven's an interesting spot because I feel like there is a clear top 6 that we're more or less in consensus with, right?
With the hitters.
Altuve, Trout, Betts, Arenado, Blackman, Harper. And then I guess it would be 7 in a roto league because we'd include Trey Turner, right? And then after that, that's where you get into some question, who's the next guy? I think for me it's Stanton, but I'm pretty sure for Heath it isn't.
No, definitely not Stanton. Heath's got Stanton like 17th or 18th.
So I think there's a good argument to be made for Kershaw there.
Yeah. I do too. I don't think I would do it. I'm not used to taking starting pitchers there, but I think it's a great argument.
The back stuff for Kershaw is what scares me, because 3 of the last 4 years he's missed a big chunk of time with the same basic injury. So,
and I wonder, shouldn't he's the consensus number 1 pitcher for both of you in both formats.
Yep.
He's less valuable in points though, right?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, the injury concern is less of a concern in Roto. Because you're losing weeks with him in head to head.
Sure.
In Roto, you're getting it no matter when it comes.
I mean, if you're counting on that, and to a certain extent, we are baking in injury risk there. It's why he's no longer in a tier of his own. I mean, in terms of ratios, he's still in a different category from those other three. But you're expecting him to throw 180 to 190 innings instead of 200 to 215. So,
Chris, how about you? What are you doing at pick 7 or 8? Are you making sure that you get a starting pitcher?
In head-to-head points, I would like to get a starting pitcher in that range. I've taken two starting pitchers with my first two picks before. It's just you really do want to stand out. I've tried to keep with my starting pitcher strategy and head-to-head points, and occasionally I'll still do it, but it's really hard. You lose a lot of ground if you go hitter heavy in head-to-head points. The only argument for it is the hitter's just a little safer.
Well, I think that you could go hitter, pitcher, and be in pretty good shape.
Yeah. No, I don't want to make it out that, like, if you don't get one of these four, you're doomed to a bad pitching staff, because I don't think that's true at all. Like, there's still a hearty second tier there of, like, the DeGroms and Severinos and Syndergaards and Carrascos. Like, you can get two of those guys. You probably have to invest your third and fourth round pick to do it, but you can get two of them. And I think there are still potential aces beyond that. But I do think, if you don't get one of the big four, and if you don't invest your second and third round picks in pitchers, if either one of those scenarios, let's say you only get one of that second tier, then you need to make up for a lack of quality with quantity. You need to do, particularly in a points league, you need to do the sort of thing I've done, where like 9 of my first 13 picks are starting pitchers. Maybe it doesn't have to be that extreme, but you need to draft the Paxtons and Keuchels and Arrietas and just hope that for enough of them that all the risk factors don't end up playing out, and you end up with as good of a pitching staff as a guy who went Granky third round, Severino fourth.
Yeah, I always play head-to-head points leagues against the same people, like you guys and podcast listeners. So I have a general idea of when the pitchers are going to come off the board, and I do feel confident that in the third, fourth, and even fifth round, I'll be able to get solid pitchers. Like, I still think Chris Archer and Robbie Ray are going to be there in the fifth round. It's not a certainty, but what you as a listener need to do is understand who you're drafting with, because a lot of times I see in head-to-head points leagues that some people just go crazy on starting pitcher. And if there are any auto picks, they're going to be starting pitchers. So adjust accordingly. If you don't think, adjust accordingly. I don't think I have to go any farther into that. All right, so we'll get to Roto in a bit. I think we've mostly gotten the first round. Top six players are hitters. You can start thinking about pitcher beginning at 7. Scott doesn't have the pitchers ranked as high as Heath because he thinks he'll just take one of them in the second round. But, it's fairly interchangeable what you want to do with your first pick and your second pick if you're drafting late in the first round. So with that said, let's talk about picks 13 through 24, I guess. And I will also point out that the two biggest differences for Scott and Heath are Chris Bryant and Giancarlo Stanton, where Scott is much higher on both of them. Stanton 7th, Bryant 9th for Scott. Stanton 17th, Bryant 18th for Heath. Do you guys want to talk about that, or should we move to round 2?
I was just trying to look to see, like, what is the common denominator there? Why I would necessarily be lower on both those guys in points than Scott? I think what it is, and it goes back to the question that I don't know if Chris has answered for us yet, but the stickiness of massive improvements in K rate.
Okay.
Because we've got an extensive history with Stanton.
Okay. But the guy you have directly in front of them is one of the three worst strikeout hitters in baseball.
Right. I wasn't saying that I thought they were going to strike out more than him. I'm trying to establish the numbers-based reason why we have them ranked differently. And I think it's probably because Scott is expecting that Chris Bryant's going to be a 19% strikeout rate guy next year. And I am not as sure about.
And Stanton made a big improvement in strikeout rate
right,
too.
Right. Stanton went from 30 to 24.
But I don't know that that's a requirement for them to live up to where I rank them, because I mean Stanton, apart from last year, has been a first round player since he debuted. Chris Bryant was, we were like drafting him fifth overall last year before we even knew he was going to make those improvements in strikeout rate. So I don't know that that's.
Stanton has been a first round player since.
So apart from last year when he had a bad year statistically and missed half the season with injury. Like, yeah, every other year we target him in the first round.
He's pretty similar to Harper. You know, when he plays, Stanton pretty much puts up first round numbers.
Right.
And he's in the best situation he's ever been in. But
there's
I
think there's a sense that Giancarlo Stanton took like some massive leap forward as a hitter last season. I don't think that's actually true. I think he stayed healthy and played like Giancarlo Stanton in this new offensive environment.
But with the one exception, and this is not a criticism of him, but he improved his strikeout rate by 20% in a time when league strikeout rate went up.
Sure, but yeah, but 2014 he had a 164 OPS plus. 2015 he had a 159. 2016 he had a 120. 2017 he had a 165.
Your point is that he may have made some improvements as a hitter last year, but it's not like his first round status depends entirely on last year, because he was still a stud before that.
All right. Well, it's an interesting perspective. And he still has him going in a range where like some very good hitters are going, you know? Like, I mean, I think 17th for Stanton, 17th for Scott is Manny Machado. 16th for Scott is Anthony Rizzo. 19th is Joey Votto. 18th is a pitcher, Max Scherzer. But, I mean, it's totally conceivable that any of those hitters could put up first round numbers. Stanton's coming off the best year. Votto's coming off a pretty damn good year too.
Is that my points league rankings?
Yeah.
I probably do need to move Scherzer up a little. 18th sounds too low.
All right then. So I think we'll save Roto for tomorrow, is my guess. But it's not that much different, except the biggest difference is the steals guys are a lot higher for Heath. And Trey Turner is third. I think second for Heath, third for Scott. I don't know how much different your strategy is going to be. We can talk about that. But the two Indians middle infielders, or, you know, they're eligible at middle infield. Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, they're late second round picks for both of these guys. JD Martinez is a late second round pick. Do you guys feel like you're okay with your JD Martinez ranking at 21 for Scott and 24 for Heath? Because, I mean, you could say he's like a 300 hitter. Going to the best ballpark, gonna DH, hopefully
stay
healthy.
He's not going to the best ballpark.
Going to the best ballpark. Oh, Arizona was better?
Yeah, he played for the end of last season. He played in a better ballpark. But
better than Comerica, for sure.
I don't think it's a bad park for him.
All right, fine. But he's in a great situation, and he hits for a good average. Like, do you think that he could be higher, JD Martinez? Could he? If you saw him go, like, 13th overall, would you be like, not too early on JD Martinez?
My sensibilities would say that's too early, but at the same time, he could certainly be the 13th best player in fantasy this year. He was better than that last year, at least on a per game basis. So, it's one of those things where is anything like if you take any player at a point when you know like there's no way he's getting back to you with your next pick. And that's probably true for the person picking 13th overall.
Sure.
If they're just that high on JD Martinez, they're not going to be able to pick him, you know, 35th overall or whatever it ends up being. So
sixth, yeah.
The question with JD Martinez is how much do unrelated previous injuries predict future injuries? And it's a lot like where we were with Giancarlo Stanton last year.
I don't know that that's the biggest question. With
I think
Martinez,
it, I mean,
because he definitely took a statistical step forward last year.
He like, did, but
it wasn't.
He, but he's
was
also
never that
always
player
been
before.
Very good.
He's always been
and
very good.
And if he
good.
Returns to what he was in the past, but plays 155 games, he's probably still a pretty good value at 24 overall or whatever you guys have him. Right.
I mean, yeah, he was like a more injury prone George Springer, I guess, before last year.
And like he's going to hit 300 probably. He's one of the best average hitters, especially among the power hitters. He's probably going to hit 35 to 40 home runs if he stays healthy. He's going to drive in a ton of runs. So the question is,
can we assume he
did
stays healthy?
Did the broken foot last season and the, like, he had a hamstring injury, like, all these different injuries. It's a lot like Stanton last year, where it wasn't one recurring injury over and over and over. And you could say, well, it's a chronic knee thing that he just can't get over. How much do those make him more likely to get injured? I think they make him more likely than most hitters.
Yeah.
But like it's something like 40% of starting hitters go on the DL at some point during the season. And it's just, is it one DL stint or is it 40 games?
And I made the case too. He's going to be a primary DH now. So will that help relieve the injury concern? Because to be clear, he's only once played even more than 125 games in a season, which is not a very ambitious total. So, that's definitely something you have to factor in. I understand what Chris is saying, where it's not like a singular chronic thing with Kershaw, where you kind of just assume it's going to happen again. But it's hard to assume somebody's going to stay healthy until you see them stay healthy.
I will also say he doesn't benefit as much from Fenway as your typical right-handed hitter.
All right, so that's pretty good discussion there. And then, do you have any strong preference for the top four first basemen? Everybody has, specifically in points leagues, and probably in Roto too, everybody has Goldschmidt as their number one first baseman?
I do. I keep coming close to dropping him in points below Votto. I haven't been able to do it yet. We're getting to the point where we probably don't have enough drafts left where it won't really even matter that much. But those two, I think, is basically a coin flip.
Okay.
With the four first basemen, the only things I feel like I can say definitively are Goldschmidt's probably – he's still number one. It's a much closer – it's a narrower gap than it used to be, but he's still number one. Rizzo is fourth in a categories league, in a non-OBP league. But apart from that, like, I don't have strong opinions, Votto versus Freeman versus Rizzo in an OBP league or a points league, or even Freeman versus Votto in a Roto league. Personally, I don't. Votto, at his best, is the best, but he's also, 34, and, last year was only the second time he hit 30 home runs.
And Heath is the highest on Aaron Judge. You've got him as a second rounder. Looks like Scott and Chris probably are going to take Judge in the third round.
I really like Judge at the 2-3 turn. I think that's a great place to draft him. If I can.
That's exactly where Scott has him. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I'm picking first or second and Aaron Judge is there, I'm happy to take him. It's just that's not where he tends to go.
Okay. Yeah, and Heath would take him before that. So if you're drafting with Heath, that's probably not going to happen.
I don't know. I think I've gotten him once.
I've drafted Aaron Judge a bunch.
I end up in a strange place in points leagues where I just don't get him.
Okay, well, late second round is a really good time for him. Heath does have Aaron Judge 16th, so he's willing to go a little bit earlier, but for whatever reason has not been getting Aaron Judge. And all right, well, let's finish with some buy or sell. Tomorrow we'll talk about the top 24 in Roto and what might be different, whether or not pitching is less valuable and how much less valuable it is. Trey Turner, Starling Marte, and D. Gordon are, I think, top 20 players for Heath. So that's interesting. Is that true? Yeah, 18th for Gordon, 20th for Starling Marte. Okay. Buy or sell. Also, I'll talk about this tomorrow. But you know what's so strange about fantasy baseball and covering it and trying to get everybody ready? It's so much more difficult than football because the leagues are all so different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so much more difficult. Oh, God, yeah. I didn't do any of the news and notes. All right.
Some people come at us with these custom settings, and it's like, what the crap? We're already catering to 8 different formats.
I got a lot of news and notes, and we'll get to them tomorrow. Tomorrow's show is already have the rundown completed because it was all supposed to be today. Buy or sell from MG. George Springer is a top 5 outfielder.
Sell.
Yeah, obviously sell. I don't rank him as a top 5 outfielder. It's not outside the realm of possibility.
I'm going to take this in a little more open direction. I'm going to say buy. I don't have him ranked as a top 5 outfielder. I don't think that's the most likely outcome, but I'll buy the fact that George Springer could be a top 5 outfielder this year. Sure.
Springer or Judge?
Judge.
I think I have Springer ranked ahead in points. I'll have to double check that.
Yes,
I don't.
You have Springer ranked ahead in points and just behind, just ahead in points, just behind in Roto.
Yeah.
Same with Cody Bellinger. I think it's like Springer, Judge, Bellinger in points, and then Judge, Bellinger, Springer, and Roto.
Yeah,
like
probably. That. I probably should have Bellinger behind Judge in points. It's like that. Those three were. I flipped them around a lot.
You do
over
have
the course of draft prep season.
You have Springer 23, Judge 24, Bellinger 25. Next buy or sell is from Rockhead Fantasy Sports. Lewis Brinson plays 125 games in 2018.
Bye.
Yeah, I'll sell. It'll be close, but I'll factor. Yeah, I'll factor an injury in there.
From Matthew, Reese Hoskins leads the NL in home runs.
Well, sell. I mean,
sell, but I'm not sure who I would pick.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
You're just gonna say Reese Hoskins is.
I'm not saying it is a fact, but he is giving me this.
So
statement.
You're playing by different rules. Like, do we need to establish rules here?
I'll say this: I'll sell it, but I'm not sure who I would buy it on.
Who would?
Like,
yeah,
I don't know who I would pick. I guess Arenado.
I'll take Arenado as the NL home run leader.
He's done it twice in the last 3 years. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And no more Stanton. So, let's see. Buy or sell from M. Capo. Michael Conforto will be a contributing outfielder in points leagues this year.
At some point this year, that will be true. I'll buy it.
Bye.
Okay.
I might pick Bellinger to lead the NL in home runs. How do you like that?
Ooh. All right. Bye. I'll buy it. Sure. From Jason, Trey Turner will have more steals than Giancarlo Stanton will have home runs.
Buy it.
Bye, but both will be lower than last year.
Lower than last? No.
Well, no. Turner was only like 45 last year, right?
You mean his pace will be worse?
His pace, yeah.
Yeah. Because Turner's been on like a 70 steals pace.
Yeah, I'll buy Turner more steals than Stan has home runs.
Okay. We got, let's see. Open bar fantasy baseball. Buy or sell, unicycle bowl flip lady is better entertainment than Miller Park hot dog sausage mascot race.
Nothing is better than Miller Park, ever, sell.
I'm guessing unicycle bowl flip lady is some lady on a unicycle flipping bowls.
It's Red Panda. Show some respect. All right?
I am not familiar with this act.
I've seen it. I don't know that there's
a specific
person.
She's very famous in the NBA.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
She does like a lot of halftime shows. She's riding a unicycle while flipping bowls from her feet to her head. It's amazing. She's a legend.
It is
bowls?
Terrific.
Yes.
Bowls. Okay, it sounded like you guys were saying bowls every time you said it. B-U-L-L-S.
Oh, no. Bowls.
Bowls. Yeah. That makes more sense. I was like, are these some kind of like baby bowls? I don't. What kind of strength does this woman have? Okay,
like,
I get it.
Pretend there's ice cream on the bottom of it. It's a bowl. So, yeah.
I'm licking that bowl right now.
Andrew says, Andrew Benintendi justifies his number 42 overall ADP. Buy or sell?
Buy it.
Sell. I'm writing an ADP overdrafted column tomorrow, and he is very much a part of it.
He is on fire right now. He's made a change to his approach. Going to have a monster year. Maybe a second round pick next year.
I don't know. Chris is showing me the bull lady video, so I missed the topic.
Andrew Benintendi justifies number 42 overall ADP.
I'll sell. Okay, I'm seeing she's balancing it on her foot. Oh, she flips it to her head. That's
unbelievable. Red Panda is a legend.
She's keeping her balance on a unicycle, which is difficult enough.
If she could do that while going down the Miller Park slide, then I would find it impressive.
It's from Spencer. Kevin Kiermaier will outproduce AJ Pollock. That's a fun one.
Oh, sell. That is fun.
I'll sell.
I mean, I'm obviously selling it, but I'm drafting Kiermaier because I think that's a likely possibility.
Jake says Jose Ramirez will outproduce Jose Altuve this season.
Sell.
He will hit more doubles. That's the only thing I would predict. Andrew Taylor, buy or sell, Michael Kopech starts 10 games for the Sox this season.
Bye.
Dansterdam, Andrew McCutchen repeats his 2017 numbers. Buy or sell?
Exactly. That'd be really difficult. Sell.
Bye. He will have the exact same season.
I think he'll be a little worse. I'll sell.
I don't even know what his numbers are. I just know that they were annoying for me. 279 with 28 home runs and 11 steals.
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually not moving to a worse park, and it's probably a better lineup. I think Andrew McCutchen's going to have a really nice year.
Okay. Let's see. We got Tyrell Lee, last one. Nacho Doritos are the most overrated chip on the market today.
You know what's great? Poppin' jalapeno Doritos. Like, just when you think you've graduated from eating Doritos, they come out with a flavor that's everything you wanted a Dorito to be.
Doritos are good.
Sounds terrible.
Doritos are fine. This is probably true, though.
Like what?
There was a flavor when I was in college called salsa. It came in a black bag, and it was amazing, and they discontinued it. And I've, like, searched for it on, like, eBay and stuff. And Poppin' Jalapeno is the closest they've come to that.
Plain Fritos are the most overrated.
Oh, get out of town.
Hey, here's a Dorito that has no flavor.
Okay, it's not a Dorito.
It's a corn chip.
It's a corn chip. And it's delicious. Three ingredients in Fritos, and they work together in harmony.
To make your breath smell terrible.
Well.
That's true.
I mean.
I've never.
It's awful. It's really bad. But Scott, you don't really like Fritos, so.
Well, no, I mean, look.
What about chili with Fritos on it? How does that make your breath smell?
A hobo pie, I think is what it's called.
Yes.
When you just put like a bunch of ground beef on Fritos, that's great.
Yeah,
but the Fritos themselves are not like, the good part of it.
There's a difference between a tortilla chip and
they're,
a Frito,
they're
right?
They're a conduit.
I have
to
no
get
desire
things inside of your mouth.
I have no desire to eat a Frito, like none. You know, like there are so many better chips. I would never just be like, oh yeah, give me a Frito. Last
so
thing,
you're buying it.
Yeah, I buy it.
The simplicity of the Frito is something that should be embraced.
The
by
question
all.
Wasn't about Fritos, so you weren't buying.
I don't.
It.
No, I'm buying Chris's.
He
statement.
Bought. He bought my statement.
Here's the last thing I want to leave everybody with. The best thing that was ever discontinued were the steak soft tacos with lime sauce from Taco Bell. The lime
dunk
sauce.
Dunk Roos have been discontinued.
Lime sauce. Unbelievable.
Odds we get lectured by Craig from Chicago about our dietary habits on Twitter today.
Have fun with that.
Bye.
For Scott, for Heath, for Chris, I'm Adam. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.